Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game off and running live here on a Wednesday edition. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise with you. Good to have you in for the next 4 hours, boys. Happy hump day.
Is that still a thing?
I guess so. We made it. Humpity some, hump, hump. Guess,
there you go. Humpity hump, hump.
Doing the hump. Oh, it's doing the bump.
Humpty, the Humpty Dance.
Yeah, the Humpty
Dance. I still did the camel.
Humpty Dance is your chance to do the hump.
That's pretty good.
On a Wednesday.
Do the Humpty Hump. On a Wednesday, do the Humpty Hump.
On a Wednesday.
Do the Humpty Hump. On Wednesday, do the Humpty Hump.
Y'all going to keep doing that for 4 hours? Or? Yeah,
two white guys will just sit here quietly?
Listen, we know our lane, okay?
A humper hump?
We know our lane.
A humpty hump?
A humpty? A humpty?
So when Derek...
Humpty?
Exactly, Marquise. When Derek and Marquise start doing that, that's like the HOV lane during rush hour.
Yeah.
Nick and I are not allowed in that lane. We'll get a ticket if we
scoot
get in that
over,
lane.
Buddy. Scoot over.
Stay in your lane.
Slower traffic, move right.
Slow down.
We got a good one today. Will Healy, the head coach at Charlotte, is going to join us in about 30 minutes, formerly at Austin Peay. We've got Derek Mason in the second hour of Vanderbilt. Plus, this morning from 8 to 8:30, another installment of our D-Mace dissection of the All-22, as 85 will highlight a few plays. And then a major Preds announcement coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. But boys, Titans, Falcons, we start to look ahead to Sunday. And I would love to look at this game and say, oh, here are the Titans again, you know, 4.5-point dogs. That seems to be their wheelhouse when they play their best. I truly don't have any idea. And I'll tell you right now, when we come to Friday's show, I'm not picking the game because I don't know.
I am 100% in favor of no predictions. I think predictions are dumb. We're breaking down the game. No, we got to break down the game. We want to look at every angle. We want to see all the possibilities. But picking a score, if you want to decide as a show that we are going to outlaw predictions on the show, we no longer do predictions, then I'd be fine with that.
I'm done until further notice.
I am strangely optimistic about this matchup for the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
A lot of different things. Diving deeper into the stats. We'll do a little bit more of this at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the stats. But right now, this Falcons team has no identity at all. There's questions about the message from Dan Quinn. And they don't play well as the favorite. They play much better the way the Titans do as the underdog, with everyone doubting them, not reading their quote unquote press clippings. So when you read about where the Falcons are right now, a lot of players talking about, hey, this isn't the right way we want to play. We're not playing up to our talent level. There's a lot of disappointment right now around this Falcons team, and they're the big favorite. That I think gives the Titans an opportunity to make some hay, because the Titans certainly play better when they're not favored. We've seen that in 3 games so far.
Well, I mean, there's disappointment with the Titans as well. They're, you know, if you listen to Delanie Walker, you listen to people in that locker room, they're disappointed too. So I think Atlanta and the Titans are in the same boat right now.
The disappointment bowl?
Both teams are disappointed at how they've started the season, considering the personnel that they have. Now, Atlanta, their offense is more explosive. The Titans' defense is more stout. So, you know, you would think that both teams would have a winning record at this point in time, and they just don't. So it's a battle of the disappointments right now, and somebody's going to be even more disappointed after Sunday.
When I started thinking about this game last night, the entry-level analysis feels like Atlanta's defense, although certainly nowhere near what Seattle's was 6-7 years ago, is built the way Dan Quinn had in Seattle. Quick, speedy guys that can fly sideline to sideline. They don't seem like an overly stout defense. So I feel like it's a Derrick Henry impose your will type of day. Yep. And then I say, oh, well, hold on a second. The Titans' offensive line's not that good.
No, and we've said those same things about the matchup against Jacksonville, right? Like, this is a Derrick Henry type of day. The difference is the Jacksonville Jaguars have arguably the one of the best two or three or four defensive lines in the league. And to your point, Nick, the Falcons play a much smaller game on defense. They're already out their safety again. Keanu Neal just unfortunately out for the season for a second straight year, which is just really unlucky for him. But this team's given up 25 points a game, which is 21st in the NFL. They are the most penalized team in the NFL. There's a few numbers that give you some hope. And again, my commentary on Atlanta and sort of observing where they are psychologically, to your point, Derek, has nothing to do with where the Titans are. The Titans are in the same boat. They're equally dealing with the same stuff. But one of them is a 5.5-point favorite. And if they both play well as the underdog, they both play well as being, quote, doubted or whatever, that does give the Titans a little bit of edge. Both teams should be feeling like, hey, we have to play great this weekend because the Falcons are coming off a relatively poor showing to the Colts. They didn't play a terrible game, but the Colts pretty much owned them the entire way. And the Titans are coming off a mini-bye with a bad taste in their mouth as well. I would expect both teams to be extremely fired up at the start of the game.
Well, Indy was the one silver lining in this all. Indy was able to run the ball effectively on the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta Falcons had a few guys go down in that game off and on, but Indy was able to run the ball somewhat effective against that team. At least Marlon Mack was. So can the Tennessee Titans and their run blocking run the ball effectively against a smaller defensive line? I think that's going to be their opportunity at winning a game, is if they can run the football. There will not be any elements involved. So, you know, the weather will be perfect. The turf will be perfect. There's no excuse why Derrick Henry shouldn't get the ball 25 times unless they get down early, which I can't, based on the Titans' defense, even though, you know, it's going to be a tall task on stopping, you know, the passing game in Atlanta Falcons. But I just can't see under any circumstance, unless they get down early, they don't run the ball and they don't run the ball and they don't run the ball.
And we know the Falcons, they go up and down the field, but Matt Ryan's very turnover prone in the red zone. But you look at this, and I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you go about defending the Falcons? Because you've got Julio on one side, you've got Calvin Ridley on the other side, Mohamed Sanu is a really quality number three receiver, but yet defensively this team's put together with three defensive backs that at least on paper you feel good about. Now, you get out of Adoree Jackson, God knows what.
No,
not against those three.
Yeah, not against those three.
And Mohamed Sanu, unbelievably good at going over the middle to make the tough catches in traffic. You got Calvin Ridley, who's got unbelievable ability to go down the field and be a straight burner, and then Julio Jones can literally kind of do whatever he wants. So it's a tough matchup. But again, this is the number three pass defense in the NFL versus the number six pass offense in the NFL. We know it's strength on strength. I'll trust Dean Pease in this situation because, again, this is the league. You're going to have to face offenses like this. They got the Chiefs coming up. They got the Saints coming up. Last year it was the Eagles and the Patriots. Like, every couple weeks, this is the NFL. You're just going to have to face a team with a bunch of dudes, and you got to figure out a way to stop them. Now, the good news is the Falcons have not been able to run the football at all at any point during the year. 27th in the league in rushing right now. You know, yards per carry, number of attempts, yards. Haven't scored a single rushing touchdown all season. Like, they're if they are going to be that one-dimensional, I trust Dean Pease to scheme something. You know, bracketing Julio, you know, underneath on Mohamed Sanu, whatever the coverage may look like, if there's very little threat of the run, that not only helps the Titans because that's their area of weakness, but it allows DMPs to be more creative and more flexible. Hopefully.
I predict this. If the Titans do not control a game by running a football, Matt Ryan will have an epic day throwing the football. He will throw for over 350 yards. If they don't control the ball, if they don't control the game by running a football, if they try to make this some, you know, we're going to try to open up our passing game, because Atlanta's in the passing game, they've lost their safety. They're not as good. And if they try to, you know, oh, we need to score points and we need to throw the football, and they get a few three and outs, Matt Ryan and that offense, once they get into a rhythm, you ain't stopping them. So best bet for the Titans is to try to control, keep their defense off the field, try to control the clock, and manage the game that way.
It is Morning Drive. We're live this morning from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. When we come back, has there already been an added element of buzz and juice with your Nashville Predators? We'll explain next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 A Game.
You saw him the other night. I thought he was dynamic with his game. I know it's exhibition. I know it's preseason. But, you know, sometimes you are who you are. And he was a dynamic player on the ice. So that was really positive to see.
That was Predators head coach Peter Laviolette yesterday with Darren Donick and Chase at Centennial Sportsplex talking about Matt Duchene as a new Nashville Predator. And that's where we will go here, because I was thinking about this yesterday. Saturday night, obviously the Preds game wasn't televised, but you could stream it on their website. So I had the 65-inch, I had the Georgia-Notre Dame game on. I had some other college game on the 32, and I was streaming the Preds game.
On a 2-inch, streaming the Preds game.
I was streaming the Preds game on my
65, 32, oh, 16.
On my Hewlett-Packard.
On the 16, that's 16, right?
I don't know what this is. You think it's 16?
16 by 9? Yeah, I think so.
16 by 9 sounds about right.
And I'm streaming it, and I'm looking at the crowd, and I'm like, all right, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago for the Preds preseason home opener on the doubleheader Monday, and how there was a decent amount of people. But Saturday night, I bet you, and I don't have the attendance numbers in front of me, but just from a visual, I would say 75% full. Now, granted, it was Tampa Bay. It's a Saturday night. You have more time to get your family there. I thought that was pretty impressive. So I'm wondering, is just the simple of addition of Matt Duchene already creating a buzz locally with this franchise, with the fan base?
I think it does.
Like new shiny toy?
Yeah, I think it does. Anytime you have a new prospect, a new addition to the team that people feel good about, mind you, this has been this ongoing back and forth thing for some years now. And it's almost as if, you know, Pred fans have been waiting for Matt Duchene to get here, and they couldn't wait to go see him. So when he's finally here with the team, they know it's just a preseason game, but they want to get their first look at Matt Duchene. So
what does $8 million get us?
Exactly. So it's like, yes, it's a shiny new toy. Yes, it's preseason. But then also it's the Preds making things fun for the fan, so they don't mind in a preseason game coming out, because unlike football, they're going to play their guys. Hockey will play their guys. They might not play them a long time, but they're going to play their guys. So you're going to see the guys that you want to see. Unlike football, you know, they ain't playing nobody. So it's like, why am I even coming? Yeah. But hockey, they're going to play the guys, and you get a chance to see Matt Duchene, and it's fun, you know, going to Bridgestone. So, you know, and it's a party, man. I mean, you got to call it what it is. It's a big party.
It's on Saturday night.
Exactly. Night is a party, and then after that, I get to go downtown to Broadway.
So what's funny about this, because I agree with you, Nick, I think that they're – people are excited about Matt Duchene. They want to know what it looks like. They have back-to-back division titles. That should add to that this team is capable of winning a cup. That all of this goes into the equation of the excitement factor. That being said, I think two of the biggest storylines through camp for me have been, number one, there are no roster spots available. Like, Freddie Goudreau is probably going to get cut. You know, Matt Irwin is probably going to get cut. Those are two guys that played a lot of minutes on these two teams, three teams the last 3 years. And so I think the idea that there's some space for these young players to play, there's just not. That to me is one of the big storylines, that the roster is basically set. Those young players will be needed at some point, as we've said on the show the last couple of weeks, but there's no spot for them to play right now. Daniel Carr probably makes the roster. There's no chance they can put him through the waivers process. Someone would grab him. So he's going to make the team. Is he a starting forward? I don't know yet. But there's just no roster spots. So that's number one. Number two, I think it's been one of the quietest summers, period, since the draft and the Duchene acquisition and the P.K. Subban trade, namely the P.K. Subban trade. It has been one of the quietest summers I can remember just in general around the team. And I think that is a good thing. I think they are more focused on hockey than they have been. And it's the double-edged sword that is P.K. Subban. PK Subban is like this bright, shiny light that lures people to your product, but then you got to deal with how bright that stinking light is sometimes. And they have not had to deal with that part of the game at all this summer. There's been no national media that's trying to come in and do TV shows with the defenseman, right? Like, none of that is going on anymore. So while that is a negative in that the national focus is no longer on your product to some degree, I think it is a positive for the play on the ice. I think the idea, and I think it's part of the equation that David Poile had to understand when he made the move to get rid of PK Subban, that I think there is a renewed focus on the nuts and bolts of hockey. There's a renewed focus on the blocking and tackling, if you will, right? And what would the blocking and tackling be of hockey? Like forechecking and back checking? Like, I don't know what the blocking and tackling of hockey would be. I'd never thought about that. But I just think it's quiet for a good reason. Mm-hmm. I think it's a positive for the team that they are all – there is no, and again, I hate calling PK Subban a distraction because he brings so much good, positive attention to your organization. But there's also this element of just, all right, we're focused on hockey now.
I don't think he was ever a distraction from the stuff that they did on ice. I'm not going to put all of this because if because of the way you entered the season last year and the way you ended the season last year was based on, you know, PK Subban and his bringing attention to your team. Well, you know what? It was good that he brought attention to your team. You know, you're winning, and you got a guy that has this bigger-than-life personality. And he's not doing it in such a way that it's disrupting what you're doing on the ice. So, yes, he brought attention, but he didn't bring attention to disrupt anything. Now, what was a disruption was he was injured, and, you know, the team was injured at one point in time, and, you know, they fell into this rut. And frankly, when he came back, he was really the only person that played well during the playoffs. If you allow one guy, and I've always said this, if your locker room allow one guy to spoil the whole thing, then you ain't got a locker room.
And this is the conversation we had with the Titans last spring when I said about pursuing Antonio Brown. And you were like, you know, well, if your locker room culture is so strong, one guy shouldn't really be able to throw that off. But isn't this just a challenge now in sports in general? And not so much about PK Subban and the Preds, but just in general, the balance of a locker room and the end result for a team versus players and their individual brand. Because we live in a day and age with social media where the player, and I'm all for the player promoting himself, but the balance of your brand personally versus the team's end goal.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting at any moment that PK Subban was a distraction or the reason they lost the game or any of that stuff at all. I'm just making an observation. Peter Laviolette's not getting national media requests right now to talk about PK Subban, period. Like, it's just not happening. No one is talking about this team from a national spotlight standpoint. Not like the regular hockey nerds are. Like, the guys, Greg Wyshynski's of the world that are covering the team, they know this is a really good hockey team and they're going to be a really dangerous team. But there isn't all the extra noise because of PK Subban's star power is so great that he brings so much attention to you that there's just this ripple effect of attention. And again, I have no idea if it's going to mean positive or negative. I think it, just going to practice and watching this team, like, there's organized chaos. Everyone seems a little bit, again, maybe I'm completely fabricating this in my head, but everyone seems a little more zeroed in on, like, the basics, the fundamentals. Like, everything, there is no, like, when one guy is so spectacularly, and I'm saying this for a positive, PK Subban is a great player and a great marketer and a great brand, and you know, it also means it comes along with a lot of extra stuff, whether it's media requests or interviews or time spent answering questions or whatever. There's just a, you know, that's just sort of all been pushed aside now. It's all just out, you know, there's no concern about it at all. There's no worry about it. Again, it's a double-edged sword. He brought a lot of attention to your organization in a very positive way. It also means the guys are not being asked questions about anything now. It's just, hey, let's go play hockey. So, again, I don't know if that's going to mean anything, but it has been a very quiet summer to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have felt that way either. I think it's just been a very quiet summer. There's not a Preds player on, you know, Good Morning America or whatever. Like, there's just, which is, again, bad and good, right, for the organization. I think it has allowed them to quietly go about their business, and that is, I think that's a good thing. I could be totally making that up.
And even to the extent of when they did land Matt Duchene, because like we talked about this for so long, and the two flirted for so many years, and there's always, you know, the links to Matt Duchene in the city of Nashville. Even when the announcement was made that they landed Matt Duchene, yeah, we talked about it. It was a big story, but I remember saying, like, I'm like, are fans truly jacked up for this? Like, I almost feel like everybody has kind of hit like an internal reset of, okay, the end goal is a Stanley Cup. Let's try to shut out all the noise, all the extracurriculars, and get, to your point, get back to basics. Yeah. And hopefully that is what pays off this year.
Well, they know that, you know.
Because now's the time.
Yeah, this is.
This is it.
They don't have a choice.
This has to be the year where they start to really push forward. Because it seems like they regressed in the last 3 years. Not saying they regressed as they're still a good team, but as far as how far they make it in the playoffs. They went to Stanley Cup one time. They got beaten the second round. They got beaten the first round.
Those are facts.
Yeah, those are just things that that can't be denied. And I think now what they understand that. And now they realize that, you know, things needed to get fixed. We need to really hunker down and figure this thing out, because, you know, sports is like anything else. Eventually people get tired and people say, you know what? What are you doing? What have you done for me? You know, if you're not moving forward, then you're moving backwards, and we can't have you moving backwards. As good as this team is and has been, it seems like they've regressed when they needed to play well, and they want to fix that. They want to fix the narrative. They want to change the narrative. Like, okay, yeah. And it's happened to certain teams. Yeah. You know, you've seen the Washington Capitals do it. You know, they went from good to great. They were picked to win the Stanley Cup like 2 years in a row and didn't win it.
And then a year they were not picked to win it.
They ended up winning it.
Well, hold on.
You picked him.
Somebody
to win
did
it.
Pick him
yeah,
on your
I
show.
I did pick him to win it. Yeah, I did. I don't want to toot my own horn here.
Toot away, buddy. You have no problem tooting away any other second during the show. Keep going.
I'm the Bill Belichick of hockey predictions.
Listen, we've said this every year for the last 3 years as well, but it's true again. This is the most talented collection of offensive weapons this team has ever had. Every year that has gone by, and David Poile said it, he's like, listen, we are focused on getting better on offense. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's basically what he's said every chance he's gotten a chance to talk. He's basically said, we are focused on offense. We are going to get better at scoring goals. And now he's invested heavily in that product. Kyle Turris's big contract. Mikael Granlund's making almost $6 million. You look at the dollars that are being spent on the forwards now, and you can't argue that this is the most talented collection of offensive weapons the Preds have ever had. That's the same thing we said last year and the year before that, but it's true every time. So there needs to be results from it. And so while there are really extremely – I think there's interesting things that are questions, to your point, Nick, the reset button that everybody's hit. I think there's a reset button on Kyle Turris. Fans don't really know, I don't think, how good Mikael Granlund can be if he's playing at his best. There's a reset on – the defense core, because PK Subban's gone and Dante Fabbro is now a new question, a new thing, a new piece of that puzzle. The farm system's better. That's new. And the goaltending situation, while it's the same, it will be different, right? So it's the same two guys, but we all assume that the ratios will be different again this year between Saros and Rene. So it's an interesting team with a ton of talent, a lot of expectations, but I think that there is more. The fans are more quietly putting pressure on this team in a positive way than in years past, where they sort of were just enjoying the ride. It feels more like, hey, guys, this is a year that you guys need to go out and get some stuff accomplished.
All right, we got a big Preds announcement coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, so stay tuned for that. But up next, Will Healy's the head coach of the Charlotte 49ers, formerly of Austin Peay. He's going to join us next. They just recently faced the Clemson Tigers. We'll talk about his program, the transition from one school to the next, and facing arguably the best team in college football. Will Healy next on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, 6:32, live here on a Wednesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace Marquise, good to have you in. 1 hour from now, Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason will join us, but right now we're joined by Will Healy, the head coach at Charlotte, formerly of Austin Peay. Coach, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How about y'all?
We're doing excellent. I wanted to ask you right out of the gate, what has the transition been like going from Austin Peay to Charlotte in year one for you?
Interesting. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. Obviously, had a great experience at Austin Peay and some really good people that you miss in Nashville and Clarksville, and you know, had a lot of fun with building something that, you know, everybody said you couldn't do. And then, you know, getting here and being able to get the staff together again and be around the guys that made Austin Peay into something special, have an opportunity to grow a program that's still really young. I mean, you're creating your own traditions. You're establishing something that I think could be really good, especially in this conference right now. And living in a great city with really good recruiting, with a really good recruiting area, and you got a really good group of seniors too that has bought in and made it an easier transition. You got to think, 6 years ago they built this place to be an FCS school, you know, and then here you are 4 years, you know, we basically played in Conference USA for 4 years, and now, you know, you're playing with the big boys, you're playing at Clemson, and so it's a different mentality and a different way of doing things, and I think we're all learning what that's supposed to look like together.
So for those that don't know, Coach, you basically one of the most remarkable turnarounds in college football history at Austin Peay, from one win in 4 years to an 8-win season. You now are taking over a program. I think Charlotte very, very underrated as far as recruiting goes, to your point. What is the key to all of that? You're great on social media. You're great with the, you know, the viral moments in the locker room and building a cohesive team, the buy-in you're talking about. What is the secret to all of that? Dabo has done it at Clemson. Coach O's doing it at LSU. What is the secret to creating that out of thin air for you and your strategies?
Well, I think a lot of it is, it is very similar to Austin Peay in a lot of ways. Number one, nobody really cared about Charlotte football in Charlotte, right? So you have to create a buzz about your program. You have to get involved in the community. People have to know you. They have to want to cheer for you. There's always going to be a bigger, more prevalent national game on while your game's going on. And if they don't want to come pull for you personally, then they're going to sit at home and watch, you know, thousands of other players nationwide, and they're not going to come watch you. There's no reason to. It's not a big enough brand right now. And that goes for recruiting too. You know, I mean, you got to get a Charlotte guy to stay in Charlotte. And right now there's a million other places that have more tradition that seem more cool, you know, and you got to make this place cool. So how do you do it? Number one, I think you make sure that the experience your guys have right now is a great experience, that your own players on your team feel like nobody takes care of them better than you do. And then I think from there, you got to make sure that you're showing off, you know, and developing relationships and whether it's helmets or jerseys or, again, I mean, we just created a thing called Club Lit, where after every win, our guys go into the locker room and celebrate, and you can only turn on the side if we win the game. How about this? So when we were at Austin Peay, we went 0 for our first 13. Mm-hmm. We beat Morehead State to break a 29-game losing streak in 46 out of the last 47, and we, like, smoked cigars in the locker room, beating a non-scholarship team, you know, and I said I want our guys to have so much fun that they crave that feeling again, and they've worked so hard to finally get off this losing train that we better enjoy it. And you go through that year and you go from 0-11, and now you start winning 4 or 5 games in a row, and all of a sudden we play Southeast Missouri, and, you know, we're up 38-7, and Southeast Missouri comes back in the fourth quarter, and I think we end up winning like 45-38. I got on the headset and I said, "Hey, remember six weeks ago we would have all jumped off a cliff for a win. So we haven't changed that much. If y'all don't go in the locker room and act like we just won the Super Bowl, then you're all fired." So we went in and I just took my shirt off and ran around and acted like a complete moron. But like, they have to enjoy winning. If they don't enjoy winning, why would they want to work so hard during the week to make it happen again? And so I think all of that helps create a buzz. I mean, the recruits that are in the locker room, I mean, you walk into Club Lit. I don't know if you're seeing that anywhere else. We're seeing some people copying our stuff, right, which is flattering. But it's been a lot of fun.
I heard of Club Lit, but that's in Miami, I believe. But Club Lit, I hadn't been there just yet, Coach.
You're invited.
Well, thank you. And now I'm gonna make light of this because your team is probably the only team that will ever hold Trevor Lawrence under 100 yards passing. So kudos to you and what your team was able to do. But no,
he played less than a quarter, don't you?
Yes. No, but Coach, how do you prepare for a talent like that, knowing that, the guys on your team, the quarterbacks on your team, isn't to that level, but you still have to prepare and give your defense sort of that same look in order to get them ready to play a team like Clemson and to play a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence? How do you prepare for that? Is it any different than you would prepare for any other quarterback, but knowing it might be arguably the best quarterback in the country?
Yeah, I went ahead and played scout team quarterback last week to make sure he gets a look. I think the thing about that game is every year whenever I go into a situation like that, at Austin Peay last year we played Georgia. We played Kentucky. At Chattanooga we played Alabama in 2009 when they won it. We played Auburn in 2010. Played Alabama a couple different times while we were there. I feel like every year I kind of search for a different way to motivate your guys or have them prepared to walk into that type of environment that they're not used to. I mean, we've done a great job here of getting 18,000 people at home games, but it's not 85,000, and it's not on Saturday night against the best athletes in the country. And I think that you got your three or four guys that you feel like could probably play at the next level. I mean, we got a DN that's playing great right now. We got a running back that's a really good player. We got a left tackle. I mean, all three of those guys have a chance to at least be in a camp. Probably two of the three will be drafted. Those guys played like dudes. I mean, they played great, and they were ready for the competition. We're playing a bunch of young guys or walk-ons at some spots too, and those lights get really bright. And the thing about Saturday for me that frustrated me the most, a pick six and 13 penalties. But, I mean, them throwing a jump ball to T. Higgins and Travis Etienne going, 50 on us and breaking eight tackles, to be honest with you, right now with where we are, that's probably going to happen. I thought we played extremely hard. I think you try to make it so much more about your team getting better and not taking a week off of practice and going in and enjoying the environment. Don't let it, so many times you play in those games and you feel like you finish the game, you're like, that flew by, I didn't even get a chance to take a deep breath. But just relax as much as you can. Enjoy the moment. I mean, for 60 minutes, you're in the mecca of college football. And go compete. Go make a highlight video, and remember this moment for the rest of your life, because you probably will. And so we had some guys that played like dudes. We had other guys that played like we were about to do-do. So it was a rough day, 52-10. Mm-hmm. They played 111 guys. I was wondering why Dabo was running plays like 2 seconds on the clock. And then I found out they broke a national record and played 111 guys. But a great experience for us.
He just wanted as many snaps for his son as possible. That's all. That's all he wanted.
Well, I watched his son muffed a punt. I know. And I was like, how you gonna handle this one? He did great. I'm sure it's a little awkward at times. They got more sons of coaches on that team than I've ever seen, but. He definitely has a different way of doing things, and it's obviously working.
Will Healy, Charlotte head coach, joining us here on Morning Drive. So, Coach, you've got FAU and Lane Kiffin's program this week. I know you'll host MTSU in early November. Just kind of looking at Conference USA right now and looking at the Eastern Division, is everything still on the table for you guys as far as preseason goals and expectations on what you want to accomplish this year?
Yeah, I mean, and I know – for me, this is my first time going through the conference. And so you don't really, I mean, you can watch all the film you want to, but you don't really understand the conference, I think, until you finish the first go around. And I mean, I know how I've been around Middle and Western and some of those schools enough to understand. I mean, they do a heck of a job, and obviously those two teams are going to be really good each and every year. I haven't seen the Marshalls, the FAUs, the FIUs, the North Texas, the UTEPs. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I've watched a bunch of film on FAU. I think Kiffin does a really good job. They got an NFL tight end that's a great player. You know, they're running tempo, getting, you know, 90, 95 plays in a game, so try to wear you down. And then they obviously got a bunch of guys that can absolutely fly. So our work will be cut out for us. I mean, my goal is every year we're here, no different than it was at Austin Peay. I want to win a conference championship and go play in bowl games. We've never been to a bowl game, and we've obviously never won a conference championship. So I understand how difficult that is. It's not me coming out saying, you know, we're going to shock the world and win a conference championship this year, but that's my goal. And until we get there, we're not going to be satisfied. So we got some really good players that are upperclassmen. We're developing some depth. And then I think that everything that we've seen in recruiting thus far, we can build it pretty quickly. Some of our national guys are playing great. Noah Henderson, that played the CPA, has started a couple games for us and played really well. Michaelius Elder has been, freshman of the week and killed it from Blackman. He's done a heck of a job. So we're not done recruiting in Nashville.
No question about that, especially with games against Middle and Western every year. Real quickly, Coach, we talked about Trevor Lawrence. To Lincoln Riley's offense at Oklahoma, are we seeing a resurgence of pocket presence, pocket passing ability in college, a renewed focus on that in the college game where you have to be able to attack the entire field from the pocket? Or do you think that just happens to be that we're in this place where we have a couple of really special athletes at the big programs? Or is it more a trend that's moving forward, or is it just some randomly special guys at programs like Bama and Clemson?
Well, I mean, I think it's a 6'6 giant that can get a laser rocket arm and can throw to 6'5 wideouts at Clemson. You know, I mean, but I think that different guys have different beliefs in what's going to work offensively. Mine is we got to run the football, we got to run the quarterback, and then we need to be dynamic in the pass game because I want to do things that help our defense. Some guys have, I mean, Lane's different, you know. I mean, Lane wants to run 95 plays a game and outscore you and have, you know, he feels like where he is at FAU, he can recruit better athletes, especially at the skill positions, than you can. So his philosophy offensively kind of matches what type of athletes he can get while he's there. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit of it's a little bit of a personality or a belief in, this is what I think helps our offense and our defense, or this is what's most important to me. I mean, because you go back and you look at, you know, a Taj Boyd and some of those guys, whenever they were at Clemson, I mean, they weren't the Trevor Lawrence stature, but they were still RPOs and some of that stuff. And Trevor's a better athlete than you think, too, now. But I just think I'm going to match my offense with my personnel. And if I can get a 6'6 quarterback that can throw the ball like Trevor Lawrence, then let's be Joe Montana.
Coach, we appreciate the time. Best of luck this weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day. Good to talk to y'all.
You got it. Will Healy, head coach at Charlotte.
Can you guys just tell in one conversation with that man why it's working? Why he is
got a little energy,
yeah,
huh?
Why he's got the buy-in factor? How he turned the worst football program in America into one that won 8 games at Austin Peay? Why he got the job at Charlotte? And why, if you're a fan at North Carolina or Tennessee, he's from Chattanooga, by the way. Any of these places that you're not watching Charlotte football a little bit closer this time, because that dude will get a Power 5 job.
I mean, he has what I think the coaches nowadays, especially if you look at what Dabo's doing, what Saban's doing, they have this energy. What Ed Orgeron is doing, they have this energy about them. Now, we may not see it all the time with Saban, but
he's not taking his shirt off in the locker room.
He's not doing that, but dang. I think he gives off this energy.
Good video.
That these young men believe they can win, mm-hmm. and they're going to continue to fight no matter what. And what Will is doing, you just don't turn around. That's the thing. And people say, well, it was just Austin Peay. No, but this team hadn't won in years.
They're garbage.
You just don't turn a team around and have them win 8 games. You just don't do that.
Note to self, I like Will Healy more than Jeremy Pruitt.
Got it. Okay.
Morning Drive, back after this. It is Morning Drive, rolling on. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yeah, this is a wrestling theme.
Is this in regular rotation for you, Marquise?
This type
of music right here?
I play music for all of you guys equally, man. So.
You do.
Asking if you listen to this.
I mean, it's free time. No, it's a wrestling theme, so yeah, I do. I'll go to the gym and play this.
Now, just truth be told, I did not request this. This was a total surprise.
Are you sure?
I did not.
You sound kind of like if you listen to this, it sounds kind of like you're an angsty teenage girl a little bit.
A little bit.
Just letting you know, Marquise.
There's not many sports radio shows where you're going to get Edge, mm-hmm. Whitney Houston, and who's your boy?
Sturgill. You talking about The Edge from U2?
No.
Not that Edge.
Just a wrestler named Edge.
Mm. Adam Copeland, if you want to call him
so
by
his
government.
So he's the second most famous Edge.
Correct.
Okay.
Edge of the city.
Speaking of Edge, though. Will Hilly's got a little edge to him, doesn't he?
Dude, it is. I'm telling y'all, this guy is going to be a name. And part of the reason we want to have Mom is just to get the scouting report on Trevor Lawrence. He just played Trevor Lawrence. He didn't play him much, like he said. I think Will Hilly is just an honest guy who creates buy-in. And I'm fascinated with how a coach can create buy-in. We're talking about with Mike Vrabel and Dan Quinn in this Titans matchup with the Falcons. Both coaches, you know, Dan Quinn especially, struggling with buy-in. Dabo Swinney has done an unbelievable job creating buy-in. LSU right now, I don't know how good they're going to be next year or the year after or whatever, but everyone is together right now at LSU. They've all bought in, right, to Joe Burrow and to the new offense and Coach O and everything. There's a buy-in there. What are we looking for from the Preds? We're looking for a buy-in, right? Like what Kyle Turris, and there needs to be this buy-in. And Will Healy, obviously it's much easier to do at a lower level, right? It's a lot easier to do at Austin Peay and Charlotte than it is at the Titans or the Predators. But how you create buy-in is fascinating to me in a locker room. When you have 100 guys and you're trying to get all of them to pull in the same direction, he's got it. And when you've got it, you're gonna continue to rise through the ranks. So I would not be surprised that in 2 or 3 years you are hearing Will Healy's name as a head football coach at a Power 5 school, whether that's North Carolina, because he's in the state, Mac Brown is old, Jeremy Pruitt. If the Vols right now had a coaching vacancy, I would say seriously consider Will Healy. I know he doesn't have the chops, Power 5 chops at all, but I don't
well,
know.
Well, what chops did Jeremy Pruitt have as far as a head coach goes? None.
I agree. Again, we're out over our skis here on this. I'm not suggesting the Vols should make a move here. I'm just saying.
But he would be on a short list of interviews.
I would have to talk to this guy because we think we know coaches, right? We see resumes and we see scores and we see a stat and we see this and we see that. You know what we don't see? We don't see the hour and a half, 2 hour long conversation that an athletic director has with the head coach in some hotel room in Dallas. We don't. That's why they make huge dollars to make those decisions. That's why it was a question about Philip Fulmer's ability to be an AD. Because your job isn't to design a defense or an offense. Your job is to sit in a hotel room or a conference room and interview someone you're about to pay $4 million to and say, I think you can be the leader of this corporation. That's what your job is as an AD. And, you know, how good are you? It's not that you should be a great interview in that setting, but fans just miss that. Like Vrabel, I think, is a perfect example. When Amy Adams Strunk and John Robinson sit down with Mike Vrabel, you don't think that that 3 hour interview process is a pretty meaningful deal? You bet it is. And Mike Vrabel comes off extremely polished and poised and full of leadership when he is in that setting. So don't tell me that isn't a huge, like that's the stuff the fans don't see. All we see is win loss record, total yards, you know, points, whatever. You don't see all the other stuff. Like, I'm going to take my shirt off in the locker room and run around and get guys excited and happy to play for me. That's something Will Healy can do. And you bet he's going to be a Power 5 coach in the next 2 years.
Just picture this a couple of years from now. Will Healy takes over for Jeremy Pruitt in Knoxville. They knock off Georgia or Alabama and everybody goes to Club Lit.
I mean, I love the idea of just enjoy winning. Just have fun. Like, guys, let's celebrate this. It seems so simple, but like it's almost like in life we've overlooked the idea of just celebrating when you accomplish something good. Just,
could that be what holds Tennessee back a little bit? Just the amount of focus and pressure to reestablish themselves, that they're not having fun in the process?
It certainly doesn't look like Tennessee's having fun. And Jeremy Pruitt is not exactly a lighthearted guy, right? Like, he's not cut from the, you know, Mac Brown, Dabo Sweeney cloth, right? He's not cut from the having a good time, loosey-goosey, you know. He's not cut. He's cut from the very different coach's son, right? Defensive coordinator, Saban disciple. Like, he's cut from a very different cloth. And listen, when you get to the SEC level, the pressure can get to you. And it takes a certain guy with a certain level of edge and attention to detail to be good in the SEC. I'm not saying Jeremy's not the guy. I'm not saying Will is. I just, there's very different approaches there. And I don't see the players falling in love with Jeremy Pruitt the way I see when I watch Will Healy's teams play.
The energy is, and that's what, I don't know if these, again, I think some coaches have figured it out. There's this line that you have to tote with making it, we're going to work, but we're going to have fun while we're working. And it's only fun when we're winning. It's not fun when we're losing. It's only fun when we're winning. Winning can't seem like work, too. Winning can't seem like, oh, we got to go to practice again. And I'm not saying it's that way with UT, but if you look on the sideline, that's the way it seems. Like, even though we're winning, it's like,
It feels like Jeremy Pruitt, especially when they took the field against BYU, he's shoving players, slapping them. Like, Jeremy Pruitt's trying to fire his players up, whereas a guy like Will Healy, just his natural energy gets his guys going. Yeah, and I think there's a big difference between those two.
It's infectious. You know, when you're around someone that, you know, when you're around someone that fabricates the energy, and you know when you're around someone that's just them. That energy and that positivity or that fun is just them. And you like being around them because they just bring that out of you. And if you're down, they bring you up.
It's like you, Derek.
It's like me.
We're just
like,
around you, and you're just infectious.
Yeah, it's like we all just went to Cool Springs MD. We all feel great now.
Hey, you might as well.
A little bounce in our step, little spring.
You know, Bruce Pearl, a little spring, big spring.
Keep your little spring to yourself over there, all right, buddy?
Yeah, don't get sprung in here.
This is Club Lit, all right? Settle down over there. Bruce Pearl is a perfect example of guys who he actually kind of does both. He fabricates it out of thin air, but it's genuine at the same time. Like, he just kind of creates tradition at Auburn basketball, and all of a sudden they're in the Final Four. Like, what, you know?
All right, here we go. 7 o'clock hours coming up next. Derek Mason will join us from Vanderbilt at 7:30. We've got the D-Mace All-22 dissection coming up at 8 o'clock and a big Preds announcement at 9. Stay there. It's Morning Drive. We're back after this.